You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa, and K224CQ in Molawa'a. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm. Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your community radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll refresh our memory with a wild medicinal plant, delve into the dynamics of agricultural community life, and lend a hand with some effective teamwork in the field. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters. Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, my brother Paul.
Great to see you.
Wonderful to be here with you as well.
We have a great show today. We're all about community today, and we're joined in studio by a very special guest who knows quite a lot about it. He's going to help guide us into some areas of knowledge around community life in the farm and how to work well together, something that is definitely a benefit when we have big jobs to tackle. But first, we're going to start with our celestial session here, giving honor to the influences from the heavens above that guide our planting and other agricultural activities. And the influences of the moon are strong on the earth and the plants that grow here. And this certainly was no mystery to the people of the Hawaiian culture back in the day. And so we will start today with the Hawaiian moon phase. And the moon phase of the day is Lono. And today's moon phase, as read by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication. And Lono rose on Kauai at 4:20 a.m. this morning. She reached her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 10:17 a.m. She will set at 4:11 p.m. this afternoon, with 7% of the moon's face illuminated. The new moon is coming up this Sunday at 2:33 a.m. Lono is one of the four major gods brought to Hawaii from Kahiki, or Tahiti in Hawaiian is pronounced Kahiki. Lono is the god of agriculture, god of thunder, of rain, and harvest. And planting recommendations are for ipu, gourds, and melons. These are both the body or the kinolau of Lono, so physical manifestations of this god in plant form. Other Lono plants include kukui and uala, sweet potato. And recently I was taught that traditionally pua'a, or pig, another form of Lono, was not eaten during makahiki season unless it was killed before makahiki began. So any preserved meats were acceptable for eating during this time period. And this year, makahiki will begin, according to the Bishop Museum and their calculations, on Monday, November 24th. And that is to celebrate the rising of the Pleiades at the same time that the sun is setting. This is what denotes it. Then you look for the new moon that follows that, and then the first crescent that's visible after the new moon is the signal of makahiki. So coming up in just a few days from now.
Way cool. Wow, there's a lot to think about there. In the biodynamic look at things, we're still in planting time with the descending moon, and today and tomorrow the moon's in Virgo, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. So we could plant things like beets or carrots, really good at this time of year. I may try a small kalo planting too, just to see the difference. I learned from our show that depending on the time of year you plant it, you'll get either lots of keikis or one big makua. And I got lots of keikis the first time, so I'm going to give it another shot and see what happens. At any rate, on Thursday, the sun will actually enter Scorpio, finally. It had a very short stay in Libra and is ready to enter the watery sign of Scorpio. Friday and Saturday, the moon is considered unproductive, and I do believe that has to do with some interesting conjunctions and oppositions with the planets. I won't go into too much detail here. Sunday, the moon's in Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leafy plants, so a good chance to get some of our winter greens going. And Monday, Tuesday next, the moon will be in Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants. And I am going to try to remember to get an early crop of peas in, because I think it's just about the right time of year for that. And while it's still planting time, doing a little bit of direct seeding.
Mm-hmm. And as far as that northern and southern transplant time that's referred to in the biodynamic calendar, I recall reading that that's really about transplanting and not so much about actually germinating seed.
Right, you are.
Yeah. But however, the daily prescriptions on the various major plant parts that should be worked with do relate to germination?
I use them that way.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure how the hardcore biodynamic folks do it, but...
Well, whatever you're doing, it seems to work, Robin, so I say keep going with that.
Yeah, excellent. Well, sounds like good moon all around.
Indeed. So we're going to look at a really exciting news item coming out from the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture. The story entitled, Hawaii-based project leading to a paradigm shift in insect-based feed production, from feednavigator.com, a website dedicated to livestock feeds, different kinds of food for feeding your livestock. And the detail here, the UH-CTAR, College of Tropical Agriculture, Bioenergy and Environment Research Group, is partnering with a Texas company called Protoculture. And together they're conducting a USDA feeding trial of layer chickens with black soldier fly larvae. The effort is funded in part by the nonprofit group Energy Accelerator. And it's thought that this innovation could make poultry and egg production in the Hawaiian Islands a viable effort again. We have just a little bit of eggs produced here in the Hawaiian Islands, especially if you look at the historical data. Around 1980, 230 million eggs were produced in the state, yet in 2010, the number had shrunk to 6 million, and this is thought to be a result pretty much entirely of the high cost of imported corn and soy-based feeds. So this company has some new technology, and they're really excited that it is the paradigm shift in insect farming, which sounds like fun, as long as they stay on the farm and out of the house.
Yeah, a little bit creepy. I definitely have noticed plenty of soldier fly larvae just growing up in my black composting cans without a whole lot of effort. But I know that if you're going to do anything on a larger scale, you need to refine your process a little bit. Sounds like that's what this research is all about, yeah?
They have. What I got from it was that their innovation that they're touting seems to be preventing the composting process of the food wastes that are the input source. So this is a great way to divert even more compostable food wastes out of the landfill and into something useful. And their particular innovation is that they keep that plant material from heating up, like as it does in a compost process. They keep the thermophilic bacteria from predominating, which would deter the larva from feeding in that particular part of the compost heap.
Right, because so they don't like it when it's too warm.
Exactly. So it keeps it cool, and it also allows for the material not to be shredded as much, which certainly would be much easier from a processing standpoint to deliver any kind of food scraps that you want to them. And the fact that the larva can feed through the entire food source rather than just at the surface where it's cool enough for them allows for, they say, 10 times the production of other systems. We've seen people experiment with the black soldier fly larvae. There were these machines or
sort the biopods, right?
The biopod passive machines that people seem to be really excited about, but it doesn't seem that they've really been hugely successful. This could be the game changer. And so they are also looking at applying this to fish food, specifically tilapia for aquaponic systems or aquaculture systems, as well as producing shrimp. So what a great way to do on-farm, on-island fertilizer. And because certainly if you're feeding chickens bugs you grew here, then they're pooping out fertilizer that can be used in our gardens and farms as well.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited to hear how these experiments go. We'll have to check back in with that.
Maybe in 10 years' time, every farm we know will have one of these small reactors growing their own black soldier fly larvae for various uses on the farm. Very exciting.
Sure. I think between that and some sorghum, people might find a nice homegrown way to feed their birds.
Exciting news. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio with your hosts Paul and Robin. Coming up in this hour, community life on the farm with community farm guru Sun Hadley. But first, we're going to have a delve out into the beautiful forests and wild places on Kauai. It could be as near as your wild landscape or lawn, but it could be as far flung as deep in the forests of Kauai is found a particular member of the carrot family that is a strong medicinal plant, delicious in salads, and just good to remember this plant, and a plant that helps you to remember. And Robin's going to share all the info with you.
Indeed. It's a complete cycle. Well, yes, we are going to open up the medicine chest, which we haven't done in quite a while. And in there, right at your toes, probably, at least in my yard, walk out the back door, there is Gotu Kola. Gotu Kola, otherwise known as pennywort, is in the Apiaceae family. As Paul said, that's the carrot family. It's related to dill and carrots. Botanically, if you want to check it out yourself, it's Centella asiatica. And what's really interesting is I'd love that we're covering this plant today when we're talking about community, because the plant itself grows on these nice little runners, and they're all linked together on this long tendril. And depending on where it's growing, the leaves can be very big and dark green if it's in a partially shady location. In a higher traffic area, the leaves will tend to be much smaller and really can vary a lot, but if you know the plant, you have no trouble identifying it. I personally think it tastes like carrots. And it definitely has that earthy, carroty flavor, and I didn't realize until recently that it was in that same family. So it's good for brain function. It's a memory enhancer. I didn't know this, but it also is valuable in skin wounds and skin conditions like psoriasis and even varicose veins. Although it is not recommended for use by pregnant or breastfeeding mamas in amounts, so if that's where you're at, you might want to stay away from this plant for now. But basically, I'd like to just nibble it whenever I'm out in the garden or grab a few leaves to throw in the salad. But I have also made Brahmi ghee, which is ghee with Gotu Kola infused in it. And I wanted to just give our listeners a quick recipe for that. It's really excellent. It's delicious and very soothing, harmonious food. So you basically take 3 teaspoons of dried leaves in 1 cup of water, and you boil that for about 5 or 10 minutes to extract the stuff out of it and strain it. And then you actually add ghee and the watery tea of the Gotu Kola together, and you simmer for another approximately 15 minutes until all that water evaporates and your ghee is a beautiful green color. And just about 1 teaspoon per day is recommended. This is by Dr. Vasant Lad's book, The Science of Self-Healing, one of my favorite books, talks so much about plants. Such a deep and interesting information on so many of the medicinal plants that are common in the tropics here and India, where he's from. And that Brahmi ghee can balance and rejuvenate the fire in you and also reduce the kapha or the excess in your constitution. So just an amazing plant.
And that recipe you shared, Robin, touches on the importance with some herbs and medicinal plants on drying the leaves before decocting them. And I'm not sure if it's true for the gotukola, but I know that that's true for other herbs because the drying process actually breaks the cell wall and allows for the medicinal constituents to be released. And it can be really quite easy to see when you do a steep of a fresh herb as opposed to a dry herb, how much the color change is.
Absolutely.
In the water of a dried herb, and it's very clear that more of that plant constituent has been released than if a similar thing was done with a fresh herb.
Absolutely. In general, I consider drying the herbs first as potentizing them in that way. And mm-hmm. and the actual reason why is, yeah, the cell walls break and they're ready to give out their medicine. They're stronger yeah. when they're dried.
So an essential reason to have a dehydrator in your kitchen.
It's a great tool to have, I have to say. Preserving-wise, I mean, you can run a lot of electricity to freeze a lot of things. I'm not a big canner, but the dehydrator definitely has been a really valuable way for me to put up or store some of the harvest.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that. We're going to move on right now to a topic that we cover every now and again, and it's social evolution on the land. We really like to honor the fact that agricultural activities, whether they be backyard gardening all the way up to large-scale commercial agriculture and everything in between, is really changing society as we know it, hopefully in the right direction. Of course, it all depends on who the practitioner is and what the practices are. Some of the biggest environmental and social problems that we face are because of agriculture, but some of the biggest solutions are to be found there as well. So in order to delve in deeper on that, we are joined today by our dear friend, Sun Hadley of One Song Farm. We're really excited to get him out of the field today to join us for a brief discussion on agricultural communities and teamwork. Sun is the master architect and farmer of One Song Farm on Kauai's North Shore. He's been growing organic produce and intentional community here on Kauai, on Hawaii Island, and in Oregon since the late 1980s. An educator, innovator, and producer, Sun holds a pure vision of renewal of our agricultural and social landscape. This vision is becoming a reality at One Song Farm. We're excited to have him share it with us today. Sun, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Paul.
Great to have you here.
Robin.
It's been really exciting to see your intentional community efforts and vision growing, especially in the last 6 months even. Things are really ramping up. And before we jump into the present, I want to invite you to lay a little groundwork for us about your life experience with intentional community, agricultural communities, and how it's brought you to where you are today.
Well, that's a huge endeavor. Actually, it's been very varied. Actually, what's going on here is this is a bag with garlic in it from Robin. We actually are growing garlic on Kauai.
Yeah.
That's community. Mm-hmm. And that was the vision 25 years ago when we started Gaien, which was Gaia and heaven combined.
And
heaven
that was
on earth, yeah.
And
same,
that was up
same
in
vision.
Up in Kapahi.
That was in Kapahi, and that was I guess in the letter that went out, we had thousands of inquiries because it went into the community's directory, mm-hmm. and people all over the world see this. Wow, intentional community in Hawaii. I'm going, and we had no parameters. Just come grow some food. Sounds simple. It's not. So the gist of it went into how we're looking, like a lot of the kids today I saw are really frustrated. there's not problems in school. It's like, where do they go? Listen to the news. So I quit the news. I quit newspapers. I quit magazines because I want to see what's going on here on Kauai. We ended up here, and I realized on Kauai, there's no away. You can't throw something away here. It's in your backyard. So I went, wow, we got chance here to do, you know, island-wide community. And I agree, it is happening. And what I saw was what the biggest piece missing, not just organic, but food production. Look at what's imported here. I go, oh, my God, let's grow some food. Sounds simple. And as you guys as gardeners know, yeah, right, we got every vector and every weed in the world right here, most of them anyway. And an ideal environment for them to continue growing. There's no downtime. So it put us really on the spot, just growing food. And then, of course, let's do it together. Yeah. It's ideal, of course. And the steps necessary became more of a spiritual journey in releasing all expectations and limitations of sustainability. And that led to not just organic gardening, but biointensive gardening. Look it up. It's all by hand. So it's organic. So no fuel used. That's the idea. So how do we do this without fuel? That's what we're looking at. And then how do we live together and share resources? Come together and share money. See how that goes. Come together and share all your foods and your bathroom and your kitchen. You know, with strangers. That's community. So what people learn doing that, and that's happening all over the island in, shared housing and stuff like that. It's nothing new. And it's what we were doing, and yet making decisions together. And that means people have different ideas of how to weed a bed or mow or don't mow or sickle or, you know, so there's so many differences. And working that out brings the hearts together closer. And that's what Kauai is about. It's aloha.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, hearts really, really, really listening. And I wanted to thank Robin and from the beginning with you coming in. We've been one. You're right there with me, and that's rare for me.
Well, thank you.
You can't fool me.
Well, I'm not trying to. I do have a question, though, because I'm actually really a solo worker myself, and I'm really fastidious. I'm particular, fussy even, about how I'm doing what I'm doing. And I personally hit a stumbling block when it comes to trying to work with others. So this conversation today is really a great heart opening and learning experience for me too, to come to understand. I mean, how do we get through those rough patches? How do we make it to that place where in a community, as you're describing, what's beautiful is everyone's there voluntarily. They want to. They're kind of self-choosing, self-governing. But we have to set up some kind of framework for people to work within. And how do we handle things when it doesn't go exactly the way we liked? And any solutions there, son? That's a big question on my heart today.
Well, people coming in and volunteers are, as Paul knows, even that can be complicated and have no experience. Yeah, let's grow food, come together and... Oh, yeah, I can garden, you know, and maybe they last for a week, you know. This is every day we're doing this, so and the bodies are used to it, so you need a physical regimen, you know. You need a psychological regimen. You need a spiritual regimen. So in order for people to visit, that's not a problem. So we need, like Paul is, he's a good organizer as far as I'm concerned, good organizer and a director. So people come together, and he's right there and showing, here's the tools, here's what you do. And he's had that experience. It's the same in community. The difference is, from what I noticed, people come and visit for 2 weeks. They're on their best physical, spiritual behavior, and they are gems. And the moment they decide to live there, they bring all the baggage with them.
Yes.
And so if somebody's coming in to work for you and you're going to pay them, like you could see in my bio, what is it? Bio sketch that I get 15 years, and a lot of that was leading construction crews as a lead carpenter, which I didn't really feel I was qualified, but just because of having the ability to see stuff and pick it up quick, we move into running these crews because that was easier for me.
Sure, so it's not so much the work anymore as the managing of the people.
Well, not just that. They had a reason to be there, and they were visiting and getting paid. Mm-hmm. Volunteers don't get paid. People coming into intentional community, you want to learn to work together. What we put it into, well, let's look at it from a different perspective here and make it genuine sustainability, because the term is misused by the system. The moment sustain came out, where that mind is in that moment, that's what they want to sustain. Has nothing to do with food or, you know. So mostly it's my paycheck. So I can buy food. Hey, nice job, son. Glad you're up there growing food. Whoa, we want to do community. Well, it's illegal basically here. So, and in order for us to do this, it has to be, one, put into a very simplistic order. So everything kind of went away. So we worked, as you can see on the bio sketch, with the Windstar and John Denver's here with his troops and giving us awards back then with Glenn Hans and giving, you know, it's like we were doing it. We started a lot of that. The compost was our brainstorm years ago, and the green waste, and with Joanne, and just dropping these little thoughts into the mainstream pool, because that's all it is. So what we have to look at is our own paradigm. So what is my belief system? So could I work with you, or could you work with me? See, we don't live together, so would that stuff come up? What we had to look at, it's more on a, you know, they might call it New Age, but all these self-help books, there is a myriad of great information out there. And basically, it's to look within. So the moment we're looking out to judge somebody as less than, forget community. You got war zone. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. So our practice is, I'm a reflection, whatever you see. And it's part of my sharing over the years. I get called, ego and super ego. And basically, I have no idea what's going on. So as guru, I don't know about that. We're just growing some food, and we're going through it up there because Kalihi Vai is so different, and that soil is so different and so deficient. Mm-hmm. And what we get is to share through the market with, like, local people and you guys to be effective. How many gardens or farms have you seen start up here organic? And they're gone. You know, it's so transient. So there's the other piece. So If you want to work with others, you got to have your trip together. And then how do they fit in? It's up to you.
We're speaking with Son Hadley of Wensong Farm here on Kauai's North Shore. We're talking about agricultural community. We're talking about, we'll be delving a little bit more into teamwork and what makes it successful coming up soon. But it's so interesting, the various layers of community and how it relates to the plant communities that we care for. We're part of so many communities here, and we learn our community skills at first from our family structure, and we learn it from culture. We're very blessed to be part of a long cherished tradition of agriculture here in the Hawaiian Islands that has lent so much knowledge of the environment and of the way in which peace can be maintained through agriculture, and certainly has been synonymous when people are busy tending the land, they don't have time to fight, it seems. So it's definitely heading us in the right direction. But at the same time, there are so many challenges, interpersonal challenges, and then challenges on the policy level, as we see, and we're proud that we have fine organic farms on Kauai, but there are a lot of other kinds of farming practices that are happening here, some practices that some people would say aren't even farming, but ways in which agricultural land is being used either in a renewing sense that honors the land, or in a way that's degrading the land and perhaps degrading our culture, continuing to send us down that road of division. So we have this opportunity to be heading in the right direction. That's the part that excites me about community. And when you think about how One Song Farm nests within the other communities of farms and farmers on the island, how does that help guide the direction, or how do you feel, Sun, about sort of maximizing that opportunity to help lead and help to either steer the canoe or at least help paddle the canoe in the right direction?
What I'd like to do and have done over the years is to drop a little pebble into the, again, pool of thought forms, consensus experience, I call it. That's what we're having here, and it is unique to Kauai. So I've been on different islands, and each one is different. Maui is actually a lot easier growing food there than that has been on Kauai. So it's so unique here. It's amazing how much we can grow. The soil deficiencies are amazing to me. It's been over-farmed. It's been toxified. This is, there's no blame. Let's, in order to have a solution here, we got to address the problem. So we have a lot of good people going out there in different parts of the island. I'm not going to be specific. And we have contaminated soils that shuts down organics immediately. And then they go out and try it, and they go, ah, it doesn't work. It's not true. So we were up there 8 years in some of the worst soil on the island in Kapahi. And it just got better and better and better. Totally organic, no kill vibration, which is ahimsa in your what is it in Hindu or something like that, which is just no harm, nonviolence. Yeah. And we got to that place, and it worked. So we had that little half acre there, learning about it, and there it was working. So we invite, UH people, and they come up and look, and it gets them started in breaking out of that box. So think about it. How do we move into a anywhere near a sustainable situation here with just food? So that's why I narrowed it down. The rest of it, wow, it's a huge can of worms. But what I see now is that each has taken a piece. And we are working toward that. And if I'm bringing up a piece that the UH and the U.S. government, the people, don't want to look at, then it's not going to be resolved, because they have the time, the resources, the people, the scientists that can focus on that and dissolve that in a heartbeat. For us, we go out, we spend $50,000 on an acre of land in amendments to get it going. You go, wow, who's going to do that? And then you're going to buy land for $80,000 an acre, and you're going to grow what to make money?
Some high-dollar crop.
Well, yeah, we know what they grow in other parts to pay for their farming. Mm-hmm. So for the system to change, it's going to take some real good questions and a sincere desire to address the real issues. So whether it's with the county council, and it's a huge task because they're in a system, and with Bernard, I mean, these are good people, and they're in a system that is in a box. So we got to change the box. That's the only way. And for us to do live together, or try to anyway, do our best, and there are ways to do that. And it takes great fortitude, perseverance, and honesty down to the core of our being. No problem.
Good phenotypes and traits indeed for our communities. You know, before the show, Paul and I were chatting about, for me, what I've learned so much about community is by watching plant communities, you know, which we generally call a forest. And we watch how those plants all work together. Part of why the food forest is so interesting to me as well, of a sort of planned out, consciously designed flow of plants helping one another with our touch. And Paul, you were mentioning how sometimes in a natural forest there's a disturbance and an invasive species, some kind of, you know, bad plant can come in there and really like mess up the entire plant community. And I find wisdom there of learning how to manage things beautifully. And so I wonder, Son, if you can tell me, I mean, how do you guys at your place deal with it when things come up, when, you know, you have to put somebody back in line or someone broke the rules or, you know.
You have to pull a weed on some level or another. You
know? Yes.
It's agreements and holding each other to that agreement. And, okay, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And then they forget. It's like, hey, you said what happened. And we don't do excuses. So we have actually have to do a verbiage, what would you call it, shift. So our American language, I call it, is so fraught with avoidance. It doesn't really say. It's a lot of, what do you call that, you know, colloquialisms, the vernacular. It really does. It's like, yay, that's great. But the person didn't share really their true feeling in that moment. So to get to that, it takes a process. So people come in, say, in community, and they bring, like I said, all their baggage, and that includes their old, you know, way of communicating. And usually it's avoidance and little fibs and denials, and all those things are up. You can't hide. So we go out, you go out, and you can go sit at a bar and have a beer and have a great conversation, and you go home. Or we can do community meetings or something and come together and really get high, and then you go home. We were doing that for years, visiting together for once a week, and one day I walked up to this house that we were having a meeting, and I looked outside, and it was like 6 feet of flip-flops outside the door. And I just stood there and just basked in that. I went, that's community. Look at this. Wow, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That gathering to talk about intentional community. And finally I just went, we're just doing it. So we'll be over here, and if you guys want to do it, come and join. And if not, that's okay too. So there's different kinds of communities. Mm. And one of the best is a construction site, because that's where we really learned how to communicate on an everyday basis. But these are with people that knew what they were doing. Now try growing food here and have a bunch of people come in that don't know what they're doing but want to. Then you got to have it together, and especially on the emotional level. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it seems harsh, really. We take a lot of judgment and flack for, like, not responding. Somebody's upset. Paul can verify this, I'm sure. We get upset sometimes. That's community. But yet, thanks for sharing. But I'm listening behind the energy, the anger, because I'm listening for the truth that we're really trying to get out. So if you can stand in that, which I've had a lot of experience with, and still stay centered and listening and loving, that's community. Mm-hmm. And we're closer than ever. Interesting point, Joan is bringing the grandchildren to the land today, right now, as we speak. I think that was Joan Porter. Thank you, Joan and Bill, for your courage in supporting organic agriculture on Kauai. And it is the land we're on is Kumuaina, right? Which goes with what Robin was sharing, the land as teacher. And that is the best teacher on the planet. It's right there. Mm-hmm. And also wanted to bring up Malama Kauai has a great newsletter and talk about, volunteer help. Katie and Keone are doing a great job over there, and they, took on a lot. So anybody out there, sometimes, it seems like a lot to just show up for a few hours on, for morale help and, move some things or cut some weeds or something, and support really what they're doing. Mm. Because it's going in with the food thing, the chicken thing. So he's taking this on. And how are you going to do that on a large scale? Well, that's what has to be looked at, Paul. Okay? First thing we look at is our diet. It's like, how much energy does it take to raise a chicken? And that's why they went out of business. Because the price of shipping, like the egg farm up there with Yuichi, if you're going to do organic, the price of organic feed is almost twice GMO feed.
Right.
And when we take a stand to say only organic and try to do it sustainable, you won't have 200 birds on an acre of land. It's going to take a lot more land. And again, that comes back to price of land on Kauai. How are we going to do this? That's a good question. County had a great idea in the beginning. County Ag Parks. That's a fabulous idea. $60 a year to rent an acre with all the water and everything put in. Now you're talking. The problem for us is the two can't go together. So organic cannot be side by side with conventional. All right? Mm-hmm. There's too many chances. And the problem here on Kauai is there's no downtime. So we have the insects all the time, and for a conventional farmer to think of not spraying is right up next to impossible. But we haven't sprayed anything going on 25 years. We're still doing market garden. Come and see. That's all we can say. It's show and tell.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful vision and thoughts from Son Hadley of One Song Farm. And we're talking all about agricultural communities today, as well as working in teams and different farms, whether they be commercial, nonprofit, like Malama Kauai you mentioned, do depend on volunteer help, do depend on a larger group of people showing up to do a particular project. I know a number of people who get to volunteer over at your farm, Son, and just cherish that opportunity to stand in the center of such a beautiful market garden, as well as to learn side by side with master practitioners there. And teamwork is something that is of great benefit, and then it's also a trade-off too. When we have high standards, like Robin mentioned, there's always a bit where if we wanted it to come out exactly the way we wanted, then we do it ourselves. But sometimes the task is too big, or the deadline is looming too large to actually do it all ourselves. So here in Secrets of the Soil Builders, our final segment for the show, we want to sort of get into the nuts and bolts of teamwork in the garden. And again, I know you use this technique a lot, so I'm wondering how you decide when particular projects are best suited for a team, how to put that team together, and how to help coordinate that team to the best effect.
It's a good question, because what we do is so multifaceted. I mean, just in the garden. So we keep it simple. We have a methodology there, the biointensive, and there's bed prep and forking and compost to turn and what happens eventually in the garden is there's no more nut grass to dig. There's basically no weeds. And when you're in a situation like that where we get rain almost every night of the year, so you can't just, hula-ho, and a lot of the stuff just comes right back again. So we have a specific, everyday projects for people. Most of it is we branched out to looking at genuine, I'm calling it, sustainability, and that's working with plant material. So again, once the diet changes, say, here's just a simple thought. All right, hey, you want to be vegetarian? Nice. What I had was people coming up and they're asking me, do you use animal manure? What? Well, that's organic, isn't it? You know, so it brings up, well, what else do you use? And then you find out that vegan compost, just vegetable compost, is way better than any animal manure. And you go, wow, these plants love this. So it's experiential. So a lot of it is diet, but ethics too, because some of the people are so sensitive and they can feel the different, we can measure vibration in plants that you see, electrical conductivity, and we go through that too. So it depends where the person, where they are. We had a surgeon come in, and to volunteer, right? Mm-hmm. And he was on it, digging beds. But his real interest was in checking soil energy. He got into electrical conductivity. So any life form has something going on, and you can test it. And that tells you the vitality of that particular soil. It ain't rocket science, but we use some of the technology to undo, restore the soils. So a lot of it is very experiential, and we just can't allow anybody to come in and start weeding. It's not like that. They have to be able to take instruction.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is, even though you see the jobs X, Y, and Z, you don't just meet somebody and put them on job X. You slow it down. You meet the person. You find out what they can do before you make the decision of what job they can do, by slowing it down instead of just chop, chop, got to get all this stuff done today. Hey, you over there, hit that. You have to be, am I hearing you right? You have to just be a little more careful and mindful about...
Definitely. But that comes with community experience. We personally can read a person's abilities in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Immediately, just talking to them. We have, for instance, we have a woman called on the phone quite a few times. I remember Tammy, a friend of ours. As soon as I heard her voice on the phone, I said, come. What? I said, come, you'll fit. She goes, really? I went, yeah. And she did. She's still here, running. You know, and I can go down the list of many people that are still here on the island because of our focus, and they are gardening and farming, and or other body workers. We got midwives, we got herbalists. It goes on and on. To have a space on Kauai and really find our true purpose in life, I think that eliminate a lot of frustration in the world, right? Because a lot of people, I feel, are not really doing what they want to do. So if we can help, I think that's as we become more skilled in, say, community, that we can help others. Because the more that I understand it, I feel it goes into this consensus experience, and it helps everyone. So it's kind of like it's up to all of us. And like I said, probably last time and many times, don't wait for politicians. This is up to the people. And we come to the market, to the gardens, and you support organic farmers and growers. That's the solution. You know, it'll work out. That gives us more time to dial in some real food. And you ask some good questions. And we got one farmer, organic farmer, doing sweet potatoes. Maybe one doing organic taro. I mean, we do it, but it's small scale. So it's a supreme challenge. We're going to have to really, as a group on the island, sit down and look at our life. And why do we have vehicles on this island that put more miles on it than anywhere else in the country? You know, and say, hey, surfers live close to the waves. Well, that's what they did. They lived at the beach. Come on. But we can't afford that now. So these are all, ruminating here with possibilities. There are ways. And to me, the community aspect is the ones that want to be surfing are closer to the beach. It's simple. Mm-hmm. And us are going to be farming. It's like I've seen the beach twice since probably 20 years. I don't know.
It's lovely to imagine the island with less car traffic and less use of fossil fuels, which obviously don't come from here, and all the way down to doing things all by hand on the garden, in the garden, on the farm. And traditionally, when large agricultural projects were done in the Hawaiian Islands, whether it be preparing a taro lo'i for a yearly planting or a fallow period, or even building of the stone walls that face taro lo'i, it involved bringing huge teams of people together to make those projects manageable, where a small family could never achieve it on their own. And so as we look at things that maybe are done by machines now, if we could mobilize a huge group of people like we did for establishing the food forest, and I've heard of other intentions of putting together once a month a team of 50 people that could visit a given farm, and just whatever that farmer needed, that huge team would have at it, and then the next month that whole team would go to the next farm, and that it would be a celebration, there'd be food and music and all this good kind of stuff. Do you think on your farm that you would welcome or even be able to receive that level of humanity to do one massive project?
Well, let's stock up on sickles. Because that's about it. When that would scare any farmer. And most farmers, same as Robin, you guys know, we are very specific. You can't just let anybody loose.
Right.
And so to have inexperienced people come with a bunch of sickles, like, yikes, we've stitched up a lot of people,
right.
You know, not paying attention. Our tools are sharp. Yeah. So it's experiential. But that's part of our focus is to have an experienced team, Paul. Yeah, have an experienced team. And that's what we've done in community, because we go out and help each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not elitist. I think people need to understand we've been putting it out. I'm actually a pretty shy, quiet guy. And to be even the radio show is kind of cool because I don't have a crowd here. But if we're at market, I got a table with food in front of me. I'm at home. So come to the market. We can chat. We got a couple hours on Saturday, 9 to 12, and a lot of good people are there. And that's what's going to change this island, is supporting those markets.
Mm-hmm. And that specific market is the Namahana Farmers Market on Saturday there in beautiful Kilauea next to Kauai Mini Golf. So folks who want to change their dietary habits or continue them, please know that you can find Sun, Lisa, and all the amazing people of One Song Farm sharing their beautiful organic produce, beyond organic, biointensive produce there. And perhaps you could catch Sun for a moment or two while he's out of the farm. And also, we're really grateful.
Awesome kimchi.
Kimchi, the kimchi.
And sauerkraut.
The starchy foods
all from
you
the
bring.
Garden. Yeah,
so
Lisa's,
much sustainable.
Lisa's doing just marvelous job with that. She's got it down. And people, the bodies are needing that life in them. So it's available.
And
free samples, too.
And the education that you share as well in your garden sharings that happen every few months or so with the new year coming up, I'm hopeful that you'll be sharing some more educational opportunities with us as well.
There's something up. I don't know. Again, in community, we feel like the rhythm, you know, of the movement, and it's been a downtime for a while. And it's Kauai is special. And so when it's uptime, we'll have another gathering.
I look forward to it.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in to In the Garden on the Farm today. We're really grateful to be joined here by Sun, by you, the listeners. We want to let you know that if you would like to have your agricultural-related event announced on the air, you can send the information, or if you're even interested in being a guest on the show, please email us at inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. You can also hear archive shows, previous shows, on the audio archive link at kkcr.org. We want to thank the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team, our engineer Jack, our phone tech Mac, our webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean, and everybody else at KKCR for keeping us on the air. And we want to invite you to tune in again each and every week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha.